Welcome back to the Future Footsteps Show. Right here on a Tuesday evening, we are looking ahead to the 29th of March, once again at the Palacio de Congreso. And today's guest joins me live on the line from right next door to Bern in Switzerland. And he is an expedition filmmaker, explorer, and cultural heritage advocate. His projects focus on expanding human curiosity about the wild and remote corners of the world and collaborates with scientists, archaeologists, and communities to document stories of the human spirit in both the present and the past. His name is Trevor Wallace, and he joins me right now. Trevor, welcome to Open Lab.
Thanks so much for having me, Joe.
I gather you've got a little injury there that you were just revealing over Zoom. It looks like you've been mangled a little bit on your latest expedition even. Tell me a little bit about what happened there.
Yeah, it's funny because it probably was in one of the most low risk scenarios that I've been in the past year. You know, I travel a lot in the Arctic. I've been put in jail and a lot of scrapes that are stories worthy of the injury. But this one, I was on the tail end of an expedition with a friend, and we were looking for a shipwreck in northern Germany, a little bit of a secret mission that we're currently still in the middle of. But we were meeting with some Swiss police divers because we're looking for this wreck in a river where there's strong current and very low visibility. So the rescue divers were giving us some advice on how to dive in these really challenging conditions. And on my bike ride home, I swerved around a little woodland creature and managed to tear all of the ligaments and tendons in my shoulder. So I'm a little bit one-armed. But yeah, back in action tomorrow. We head back to continue our search and hopefully find this wreck we've been looking for.
Your job sounds pretty exciting, I can't lie. I'm slightly sitting here tapping away, doing my desk job, thinking I kind of need to get out there and do something a little bit more adventurous compared to you. I mean, is this one of the worst accidents you've ever had on an expedition, even though that didn't actually happen whilst on the job per se?
Yeah, I mean, I've had other scrapes before. I got nerve damage in my leg in Siberia from being in a trench for like 9 hours in a row. I had my ribs broken when I was 14 in Tanzania. But yeah, it's usually not injured. I try to stay pretty safe. I'm not like an adrenaline junkie. I'm actually much more of a nerd and seek out like the knowledge is the treasure for me, and I'd rather stay unscathed, especially given this past accident.
I mean, I went diving last summer in Esfreus, which is like a MPA between here and Formentera, with a National Geographic explorer called Manu San Felix, and I was trying to help him replant the Posidonia, or at least try and find some uprooted chunks of it with you know, some decent amounts of root attached. And I had no idea what I was doing. It's literally the longest time I've ever dived in my entire life. And I had, literally was floundering around with zero buoyancy, trying to sort of, you know, pick up bits of something, which I wasn't quite sure what I was doing, with some marine biologists. And the whole thing was very discombobulating. And I came out of there feeling a bit like a space cadet after being underwater for the longest length of time I've ever spent. And I can't even begin to imagine what it feels like to do what you do. And I mean, how long do you spend underwater doing the kind of work, kind of examining these wrecks?
Yeah, so luckily, it was always my dream to look for shipwrecks. I mean, I think it's like a kind of stuff of childhood ambitions to try to find like sunken treasure. But the world of underwater archaeology is difficult to break into. A lot of the wrecks are super deep or technical. And it took me years to find a site that was in a place where the logistics are relatively simple. Like I mentioned, some of my work has been in, you know, Siberia, so way off the beaten path in the middle of a swamp. So I was really looking for a site you know, to cut my teeth on and actually to bring in people who, you know, maybe didn't have a ton of diving experience and fund our expedition through a field school. So I found this site in Western Menorca, which is in just 3-4 meters of water. So we're able to dive on this incredible underwater museum. And yeah, we do hour and a half long shifts, relaxed. We're back up on the jetty sipping coffee. I think for me, it's like, you know, adventure and exploration doesn't always have to be extreme. I think a lot of people, you know, they want to prove that they were like the first or the best and at the top of the mountain. But exploration for me now is not about planting a flag. It's about creating a common understanding and using that shared sense of curiosity to gather new knowledge and understand the world around us better. And it sounds like that's what you were doing in that MPA. It sounds like an amazing project.
It is. I mean, I interviewed him a long time ago and found out about what he does do at that particular time of the year when the Posidonia is flowering, essentially, and mating. But I had zero training and he wasn't there that day. He was off on some mad expedition in the Galapagos Islands. I went out with his son and it was just mad and I had no idea what to expect and I don't think I was terribly helpful, but it was just, you know, I think in climate change land, like these days, you just feel so incredibly helpless all the time, and just to actually just do one small tiny act was quite joyous, and I left there feeling like, I've actually done something. I mean, it's pretty tiny, but at least I tried. It's really interesting to hear about what you do. And I think, like, how do you find out about these wrecks? Like, who tells you that these things are even there in the first place? Like,
yeah, so that one of the interesting things about archaeology is that there's so much information out there and there's so many sites that have been identified, but not really like uncovered much. So there were like survey documents when they were going to expand the port for the inter-island ferry. They looked to the old port of Ciutadella and then they were like, oh my God, there's so much archaeology here, but it's too expensive. Oh, they did some test trenches and I guess, you know, we'll just leave it. And I mean, that's like a kind of the common thing in the Mediterranean and Europe in general is you pick up a rock anywhere and there's archaeology, but it's the very unsexy process of, you know, getting the permits and setting up the project and believing in it and getting funding, which led me on this, you know, basically it was a 3-year journey just to set up the project, build the local collaborations. And, you know, ultimately archaeology and underwater archaeology is a very small world. And I've been a fellow of the Explorers Club for about 12 years. I've been a vice president. So I run the grants at the Explorers Club for the past 7 years. And you meet people doing incredible things all the time. And there's not enough hours in the day or days in the year to fill all of the projects that I would love to do. But, you know, I feel super lucky as well. It's always just keeping your ear to the ground. And I'd always, you know, I speak Castellano, I speak Spanish. I'd always wanted to do something in Spain. I knew a Spanish archaeologist who had come to Siberia and I got along well with him. And I said, look, I'm on this hunt for like a site that's in shallow water and is feasible, but it's also interesting. And the minute I heard about this, you know, site in Cala and Busquets, I was like, we got to make this happen.
Mm, wow. So how long between finding out about its existence and actually, you know, diving on the site? I mean, how long did that take?
Yeah, I mean, it was years. I mean, the red tape to get permission, you know, which is good, you know, to have, you need permits and there is a real danger of people don't know what they're doing digging up sites. And although I really want to encourage people to engage with archaeology because there's so much in the media, and that's a bit what my talk is about like kind of the misinformation, the conspiracy theories, which, you know, goes across climate and health and government. And there's also a foothold in our understanding of the past. And so, yeah, it took years, but it was the proper route. So you have to work with local collaborators. There's this big problem of parachute science of people, you know, kind of dropping in, extracting data and getting out and not working with local people, not sharing what we found, because this little cove is a place that people pass all the time. It's actually still an active harbor. So, it's really... it was really important for us to engage not just the Explorers Club community and the people who do our field school, but the local community as well.
Amazing. And how have you been finding it over there in Menorca, another little island? Obviously, you live on the island of Hawaii. Is that where you're from originally?
No, so I grew up in California, but my folks have been on Kauai, which is the westernmost of the Hawaiian island chain. And yeah, there's a lot of little connections just between island life. It's, you know, it's a small community. Everyone knows everyone. And I really love Menorca. It's a slow pace. The people who work in cultural heritage and archaeology are a fantastic community. And there's just so much richness, like below the surface as well as above. They just got, and I think it was 2023, UNESCO World Heritage designation. And they have more registered prehistoric sites than anywhere else in the world. So the Taliotic culture and all of these megalithic stone structures are like incredible, mind-blowing. You imagined, you know, these things going back 3,000 years, like massive stones they were able to move. The taulas, these like huge T-shaped megalithic stone structures, and the navetas, which are these almost like boat shaped. Yeah, it's wonderful to be in Menorca.
So how does it feel then when you start to find this little nugget of truth as you describe it? I mean, when you really lay your hands on something that leads to, you know, fact and knowledge and, you know, past experience, like, how does that feel? We can't go too deep into this, obviously, because we'll ruin your talk, and we're trying to, you know, lay a little bit of teasing down for those people listening to make them want to come and hear this talk in all its glory. But, you know, describe that sensation for us.
Yeah, I mean, to touch something and see something that no one has touched or seen for thousands, hundreds or thousands of years is incredibly unique. I mean, you get to be a time traveler, and it only happens once. Like, archaeology is a destructive process. So you're, as you dig, you know, you also have this responsibility. It's almost like you're reading this page that's burned. So you have to read it really well and take good notes, because you're witness to this moment. And yeah, I mean, Menorca in particular was such a maritime's crossroads, you know, going back to the Bronze Age and then the Phoenicians, Romans, Punic cultures, and up until, you know, the 18th, 19th century is fascinating because it was Spanish and French and British and all over again. And so it's got this rich tapestry, and to feel like you could be a part of that is so unique.
What one little clue can you give us to something that you've found thus far?
Yeah, I mean, I think like every little piece is great. We found a lot of cool little artifacts. Of course, the ships themselves are kind of like the biggest find, which we're trying to understand. And it truly is a graveyard of ships. And we're lucky because most of the ports in the Mediterranean are dredged. So to accommodate modern ships going through, basically in the first half of the 20th century, most of these ports would have these massive industrial machines that would just dredge out. Sometimes they would notice that there would be archaeological material, and sometimes not. The very, very few intact ancient harbors that we have, there's like one in Cyprus and one in Libya, were used in antiquity, but for like a short period of time, and then not used again. And they're in such a remote place that they stayed intact. But ours has been continued to be used, and it was just lucky that they never dredged this little cove. So every single layer has things. I mean, we've found, you know, clay pipes from sailors from the 19th century. We found Roman amphora, you know, 7-Eleven, Dressel 20, which are these giant ones for oil. You know, we found this one Carthaginian plate that had an inscription on it. It's every day you find something incredible. I love finding these little lead musket balls that you find everywhere. And, you know, there was all this, you know, they were fighting pirates and there was a lot of conflict. And it's, yeah, it's something out of Pirates of the Caribbean or Black Sails or something. It's great to find those.
Oh my God, I'm dying to hear this talk now. I'm very excited. I mean, what set the scene then for what you think actually, it's time to get up. Set the scene for what you think actually went down then for when the ship sank without ruining the talk. If
yeah.
That's possible.
So, yeah, without giving too many spoilers, we thought we were excavating a ship from 1702. There's records that go back to the 1500s. The reason we don't have any records before the 1500s is that there was a series of pirate attacks, including one by Redbeard, where all the documents were destroyed. And so there's a big mystery there. And then what we have been finding, and we're just getting our carbon dates and our dendroanalysis from the wood samples we removed, is, it's a puzzle. It's a puzzle of these ships. We know that there are ships that sank in this cove from bad winter storms, like that 1702 wreck, but there's also this really mysterious and fascinating meteorological phenomenon called a risaga, or a meteo tsunami. So it's basically like a tidal surge that in these deep, long channels, like they have them on the eastern side of Menorca as well in Mahon, which after Pearl Harbor is the longest deep water port, natural port in the world. You basically have these rises and drops in the sea level in the harbors like overnight. So people wonder, why would there be so many wrecks in a safe harbor? And it's because there are these crazy events, and they happen every maybe 16, 20 years, the really strong ones. And you can see even now when we have, you know, weather predicting models and we have boats with motors that's easy to navigate out of the ports, people can save their boats and their ships. But in ancient times, it was just like, oh, wake up, and it's just trashed. And bad for them, but good for archaeologists, because, I mean, it's like a time capsule. The things that you usually find in an archaeological context, like the tombs that we were excavating in Siberia, they're fascinating, but they're always in this mortuary context. They're always in this, they were prepared in a ritual, ceremonial way that were beliefs that are sometimes hard to fully understand. It's hard to get an insight into their day-to-day life because it's their burials. But shipwrecks or disasters, you know, eruptions like Pompeii that freeze that moment in time, give us these little kernels of like what was going on in that moment. And what we've been finding has been this incredible view back in time. And that's why, I sometimes feel a little guilty, like that we get so much excitement from, you know, misery in centuries past, but they're really special.
Don't feel guilty. Definitely not. I mean, you know, what a amazing job that you do have, that you, obviously appreciate and enjoy all the kind of delicious morsels of fact finding that tend to happen. I mean, lastly, what are you going to do with this information? Like, what's the point of all of this? What are you looking to get out of this? And once you find all this information, where does it go? And what's the end result?
Yeah, so we have the opportunity and the responsibility for documenting this whole entire chronology going down each layer by layer. So we know we have at least 6 shipwrecks in Colin Busquets and probably more. We've been able to uncover parts of several of them. And as we carefully document this, we're going to be able to create a picture of basically going back 2,000 years, century by century, how this port was used, you know, what were the different cultures, the different empires that were coming through this place. It's just rare. I mean, like they're usually disturbed. Like you can get a lot of information from disturbed archaeological sites, but in this case, we have the full picture, more or less. And along the way, because of the conditions of the site, I've been able to bring on people like you who are like curious and want to do citizen science and want to learn. So we've trained over 25 people how to dive, how to control their buoyancy, and they're finding artifacts firsthand. And some of them were actually absolutely new divers. So we not only got them certified for their PADI open water, but we designed a PADI specialty course called Exploration Diver Underwater Archaeology. So they get a multiple day course, a certification, and then we put them on the team. So they're using the airlifts and the water lifts to uncover the sediment and find things themselves and add to this whole expedition and all of the, you know, it'll be a series of academic peer-reviewed journal articles. We have to do a lot of internal reports for Menorca. I'd have to do reports for the Explorers Club flag that we receive, which is a cool little honor that we get. And then I've been creating little films along the way. So I'm, as a filmmaker, I want to document our journey and all the surprises we have. And, you know, a lot of times with archaeological TV shows, they drop in after the fact, all the excitement is gone, and they interview the archaeologists and what they found. It's sort of academic and, oh yeah, we found this, this was cool. But what I love about the chance of leading the expedition is we get to film it and experience it as it's happening.
God. How much longer are you going to be doing this for?
Oh man, my my project partners is like, we'll be doing this until we're abuelitos, till we're all gray and bald and there's so many wrecks. It's like, we could do this forever. And yeah, I mean, Menorca has really captured my heart. And I know there are other, in the Balearic Islands, it's like, it's full of interesting wrecks. And, you know, there's stories of Dutch galleons off the northern coast. There's another very old wreck off the southern coast of Menorca. And that's just one of the islands. So can't wait to get to Ibiza and see and ask the local archaeologists what they got there.
Well, we can't wait to have you. I'm so looking forward to hosting this on stage on the 29th of March in just a few short weeks' time. I think it's like three now, which is frightening. Feeling vastly underprepared. No, I'm joking. But yeah, it's going to be an amazing day. And obviously you've been connecting with all of the other speakers as well. How has your sort of TEDx journey been? How would you describe the process of doing this?
Well, I can't say that getting surgery helped me very much. And yeah, being on drugs and doing physical therapy and being on multiple expeditions. But no, it's been a great process. It's been very challenging. You know, in my role as vice president at the Explorers Club, I do public speaking, but I sought out this opportunity because I knew the preparation would force me, you know, to really hone in on a core idea. And of course, for me, sometimes it's like I have too many ideas and too many stories of different projects. And I chose the one that I think is most relative to this place. But I think it's, you know, with the help of my coaches, you know, we came upon a topic that I think is relevant. I think this moment of examining truth and how we uncover truth. And even though my projects are a little bit esoteric and off the map, I think that the way that we understand the past can help us understand our present. And it's really important right now to understand what is fake and what is real. And I think that archaeology has given me an incredible tool set. And I've seen people actually change their mind about things by doing it firsthand. And so I hope that comes through in my talk. You know, I'm still honing it a little bit. And, you know, I've heard some of the other speakers that some of their talks too do actually tie into some of these concepts around truth and fact-based things and evidence and, you know, our current moment with the internet and media. And yeah, it's going to be an amazing event.
Amazing. I can't wait to see you there. Lastly, is there one song, if you had to say, that could be the soundtrack to your talk or the work that you do or the project that you're on? What would it be? It can't be Enya.
Oh, God. Caribbean Blue. Yeah, it's got to be. I actually listened. That was part of my my post-surgery playlist to try to chill myself out. But yeah, what would it be? Maybe like Gut Feeling by Devo. Like some Steve Zissou and the Life Aquatic vibes.
We'll see if our producer, Antonio Prosper, can dig that one out for us. Thank you so much, Antonio, for all that you do to make the show all that it is. And thank you so much to you, Trevor, for joining us from Switzerland with your dodgy shoulder. I hope that you get yourself back on fighting fit form for TEDx Delft Vila in just a few short weeks' time. There are tickets still available at TEDxDelftVila.com, and we're very much looking forward to seeing you there. Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you, Joe.
It's the reset rebel. It's the reset rebel. It's the reset rebel. Coming to you every day.